I'm Rachel, the creative director for Ram Dass's Love Serve Remember Foundation, and I'd like to welcome you to our Inner Academy, a virtual Dharma hall where our family of wisdom teachers will help you navigate your daily life by bringing ancient wisdom into a modern context. With over 200 hours of audio and video teachings, meditations, and practices from teachers like Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Roshi Joan Halifax, Joseph Goldstein, and many more, the Inner Academy is your core resource for finding balance, presence, and navigating the ups and downs of your daily life. The Inner Academy has guidance for every step of your journey. Choose from an annual or monthly membership and gain access to past and future courses, retreat replays, virtual community, and much more. If you've been familiar with Love Serve Remember Foundation for a while, you'll know that most of our offerings are given freely or on a sliding scale basis. So when you subscribe to the Inner Academy, you're paying it forward and bolstering our ability to continue creating accessible offerings for all in the future, as Ram Dass wished for us to do. Be here now and start your journey with Ram Dass's Inner Academy today. For more, visit ramdass.org/innerAcademy.
Teaching meditation can be a deeply rewarding experience. Help others improve their mental and emotional well-being, reduce stress, improve focus, increase self-awareness and self-regulation, all while deepening your own practice and understanding. Join acclaimed author, Buddhist teacher, and Emmy Award-winning musician David Nickturn on Tuesday, May 28th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for a free online discussion on teaching meditation in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/be-here-now for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nickturn on May 28th.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, everyone. It's Raghu with Mind Rolling. And today I'm delighted to have Kesha with me. And welcome.
Yay.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And of course, I have to say that everybody should get over to wherever they can listen to Gag Order, which is this beautiful new record from Kesha.
Thank you.
So, you know, I'm really happy to talk about that a little bit and just, I mean, you have, the interesting thing is, so this record was produced by Rick Rubin.
Yes.
And I think most of you out there know who Rick is as well. And Rick is somebody who produced a couple of records when I had a record company with Krishna Dass called Triloka Records. And Rick was involved in a couple of those records.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that you had a record company. What?
Didn't we talk about that when you came? Or on the phone?
I
think we talked about it on the phone a little, but I've been in the record business. Yeah. Anyhow, the fact is he loved chanting. And you have never talked to him. He knew that you were using Ram Dass. So everybody, We're going a little too fast here because
let's back it up.
How the hell did we get together with Kesha?
The random allegiance has come from this beautiful experience I've had. I have just made a new record. It's called Gag Order. I did it with Rick Rubin. If anybody doesn't know who that is, I believe he's the greatest living music producer. That's my opinion. But he has a intense track record that could probably back up that claim.
Not probably.
that could absolutely definitively back up that claim. And Raghu and I got connected because I connect so much with the speakings of and the writings of Ram Dass. I feel very seen when I read Ram Dass. I feel very seen when I listen to Ram Dass. And I really wanted to sample a portion of Ram Dass speaking. And I was told that was probably 99.9% off the table, that Ram Dass generally isn't cleared to use in commercial things. I was just given a very bleak statistic.
Who told you that? You never told me this.
Oh, I didn't tell you that?
No.
Oh my gosh. No, because my dream was to have Ram Dass, and I forget who it was. It was someone
in legal at the record company or something.
It may have been somebody on the legal side of things, just said that's the probability is very low.
Well, that person, Kesha, that person had not been listening to anything, I guess. I don't know what, but because we've been for the last several years, 3 or 4 years, been producing records and music that included people working with Ram Dass's words and putting, underscores, and we were working with East Four. I guess it's hard to pack everything in a small visit or a phone call or two. But yeah, so anybody who would have, listened and be tuned in that way, Ram Dass, he was alive when this stuff was happening. He was completely into it. It's our little thing's called Soulland Records.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So we're doing this, very much so. So anyhow, next step, what happened next?
Oh, the next step was I said, fuck it. I want to at least just make something from this one piece that really speaks to me. And I will send it to who we need to send it to, and I will beg. I will humble myself and purely beg to use it. And that's exactly what I did. And I got the pleasure of getting you on the phone, and we had a wonderful conversation.
Yeah.
And you ended up allowing me to use it on my new record, which I feel like is a real healing piece of art for me. So I will be forever grateful. I remember we talking on the phone, I was crying because you said you would let me use it, and I was so ready for you to say no. And then when you said yes, I felt just like, not only am I excited because Ram Dass is speaking to me through this particular piece of music that we made, but also maybe one of my fans out there will then get introduced to Ram Dass. And Ram Dass is someone that has helped me through some of the most difficult times of my life. And I don't want to gatekeep that. I want to spread that, because I feel like a lot of people in this world suffer from like feeling inadequate, mental health, panic attacks, anxiety, the list goes on, depression, etc. And Ram Dass is someone that anchors me.
Yeah. I mean, there's a long line there of how that has affected so many people over many years. And that's, it happened to me initially as well when I met him.
When did he, I don't like know that much about his, I don't know his autobiography. So I don't know when he passed away.
He left in December 2019, right before the pandemic, which, given his state, would have been a very difficult had he been alive. So he just got out right at the right time. Now, he'd been in a wheelchair 22 or 3 years, which is extraordinary for someone, a stroke victim that was half paralyzed. I mean, it was miraculous, really. Yeah, yeah.
See, that's something I didn't know either. I know his I don't know if you call it teachings or just books. Like, I know the
teachings.
The teachings, but I didn't know that about him. I didn't know he was paralyzed.
Oh, really?
I didn't know he was in a wheelchair. No, I had no idea.
Oh, my. Okay, well, I'm going to turn you on to some of the videos that show him in this. So after when he went, finally landed in Maui, which was in 2004, the end of 2004. When that finally happened, he started getting taken care of by really great people. He had been taken care of before and rehabbed and all that stuff, but this was like a place for him to luxuriate and let go. You know, he could allow himself to be taken care of because all he did prior mm-hmm. to the stroke was take care of people. And he really transformed over that period of time. It was amazing. You know, one of the things, though, actually, that conversation we had where you were asking me about getting the right to put it on the album, and one of the things that came out of that, Kesha, was for me, was how I saw we had real similarities in the way that we wanted to share this thing that we loved. This is what I have been doing my entire life. And I've been fortunate enough to work in different areas that allowed me to do it. And yet this is what I got from you. So that was the huge fulcrum for me to go, of course you should do this. Of course you should do it. Yeah.
I had no idea that it was kind of even really legitimately going to maybe be a yes. So I had really prepared myself for a no. And so when you said I could, I cried all night, happy tears. Like you really, I feel like sacred things should be treated with care. And when someone is no longer here to protect their words, obviously it's amazing to have someone like you to make sure the legacy stays intact and intentional with that of the person that said them and the things that they created. So also understood that potentially there could have been parts of my past. I've made a lot of dumb fucking mistakes, you know, like I've been an idiot. We were all teenagers. So I just was so worried that, oh my God, there's been so many unevolved moments that have been caught on press.
You're the only one with those unevolved moments. Oh my God. I mean, and you know, it's and so-called spiritual person, so-called worldly person, so-called combination of those things. We are all human, period.
That's true.
You know, it's just around perspective. So one of the other things that I just started listening to the album. What? I think I got an advance a couple of weeks ago or something.
Yeah.
And there's another commonality here related to Ram Dass with this record, which is, well, it's absolutely transparent. So it's no big reveal, I'll tell you that. But just the, when I met Ram Dass, one of the, and I didn't know who he was. I was running a radio station, a rock and roll radio station. This is great. You never heard this story. I've told it a million times.
No, can you please tell me
the story?
It's
always good to have one captured audience too.
No, I love it. And some of my fans may have never heard this story. And I'm going to, hopefully they'll listen to this. So tell us.
So I was early 20s. I was the program director of a rock and roll station in Montreal. And it was free form. We played whatever we wanted. It was phenomenal. It was just being simulcast from FM to AM. It was just a phenomenal opportunity. So I'm doing that, and I get a call one day. Hey, could you please just help us promote? Ram Dass is giving a lecture at McGill University. It was like the Harvard of Canada is McGill University. And I go, Ram Dass? What's that? Who that? And he goes, Richard Alpert and Tim Leary? And I went, oh, yeah, because we were far into the psychedelic thing at that time, right? Late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
So I said, well, I got to listen to something. You must have a tape or something, what he's done before. Send it over to the studio, to the station. So they sent it over. And I went into one of the studios, and I put it on, and every word just completely resounded in a place that I didn't even know existed. I mean, I did because I'd had some experiences, but still, it was so profound. And one of the most, I don't even know what to call it, but it assuaged the beast. Let's put it that way. Mm. Because the beast was all about self-judgment, unworthiness, complete, you know, critical mind fuck, you know, on a moment-to-moment basis. What do we do to ourselves? It's extraordinary. Yeah. If you talk to somebody else the way you talk to yourself, they put you in jail or something. I mean, it was, you know, it's crazy.
It is abusive. It's abusive.
It's abusive.
And it's cruel.
Yeah. So anyhow, this is part of the work of transforming, certainly. But what happened is he was so honest about his foibles and so he'd obviously gotten to a place where he could first forgive this stuff in a way that wasn't heavy-handed, just by, okay, it's okay to be human. It's okay. We're human. And he passed this on. And a sense of humor, like, you know, you laughing at the way, you know, you're just completely acting out of defense mechanisms, you know, self-interest and motivation, you know, on your moment-to-moment basis. That's what's going on.
Oh, God.
And he's able, he just laugh at that. And again, I'm just human. It's okay. I don't need to stay in that place. And maybe I'm going to think that there's a way to become happy, so I'll do stuff. There's some methods perhaps to get me some distance, some witness. In some way, it burns off the karma, so to speak. But that honesty, what happened to me is I went, oh, I'm okay. These thoughts aren't who I am, you know. And Ram Dass really outlined that to a T. This record, you are the level of honesty that you get to in this record is formidable, Kesha. Formidable.
Thank you. Thank you. It means a lot. I mean, from you, like having grown up in the industry that I've grown up in, it's like I came out and it was like pop stars and award shows and perfection and and that whole world felt so unaligned with who I am, and I felt like I got further and further from my spirit and my truth trying to convey this false sense, this bravado, this perfection, this all of this confidence that, you know, you have flashes of, sure. But what was really going on in my head the whole time was what you can hear on my new record. And I was so scared to be honest about that because there's an element of, you know, I've had big records. I've had lots of success. I have a beautiful home. My family members are, for the most part, very healthy. Like, I don't want to complain or seem ungrateful, but there is an element of outward seeking that only made me feel emptier. I started becoming an artist because I felt like I had this emptiness, and I thought, oh my God, when I get successful, or it's going to go away. Okay, when I tour. Oh my God, when I have a big song. Oh my God, my album's going to go number one. And then once I achieved those things, the hole got louder. And then there wasn't even a game plan to try to fill the hole, to try to fix the hole, because I'd just done the whole game plan. And I worked really hard because I was like, that's going to fix it. And when it didn't fix it, it was really disappointing, and I felt very helpless. And that was the point that I was at when I made this album. And I felt like I just need to be really, really, really honest with not only myself, but with everybody else, because this commercialized ideal of what you're supposed to look like or be, what you're supposed to achieve. You know, I had an eating disorder for years because I wanted to maintain this image of the correct image of what a woman should look like. And looking back, I'm disappointed because I realized I was perpetuating an unhealthy ideal and potentially causing other people to starve themselves. And I just decided I don't want to be a part of the problem as much as I can have the awareness to be a part of a solution. I want to have that. Of course, I'm not fucking enlightened, but I have like moments where I've realized I can do better.
You just said something. That was great. It just reminded me of something.
What? Tell me.
When you said, I'm not enlightened, but, you know, just trying to do the best I can, pretty much, right?
Yeah.
So Ram Dass was sitting with Neem Karoli Baba, our guru, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, okay, how can I get enlightened? And he was expecting secret teachings, secret mantras, because his Buddhist friends had been getting them. And so he thought, wow, now, you know, an enlightened being is going to get me enlightened here. And Maharaji said, yeah, feed people. And Ram Dass thought to himself, that's the most penny-ante bullshit. What do you mean, feed people? I need to get a real practice. And so he asked in a different way. And Maharaji said, love everyone. Simple. And that was the beginning of him, Ram Dass, understanding the reality isn't for us to think about, you know, the loftiness of quote unquote enlightenment. It was about the reality of how can we help people, you know?
Ooh, that just gave me chills.
And that, you know, so it's kindness, it's compassion, it's, you know, that's what we've been learning all these years, all these decades, is how do we transform ourselves out of the me land into the me land.
That's such an interesting concept for someone whose entire life revolves around, like, literally, I like live inside of my own asshole most of the day. So, like, that's a great reminder. But I did.
Yeah, what?
Oh, no, it's gone. They come and go fast. Yeah, go ahead. Right.
No, I was just like, the truth is it doesn't matter what you do. And you're a brand and you're attended to as such because it's a commodity, a brand. And the thing is not to get identified. Now, there's stuff on this record about identity as well, right? I mean, you talk about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so
I was doing a meditation and I had this moment where the identity, like the ego, the self, like I had a real crisis and saw kind of this collapse of who I thought I was happened. And it was freeing and terrifying.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I think it's a good thing. My therapist seems to think it's a good thing, so I'm just trying to lean into it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is happening. Absolutely. You have it writ in bright Vegas lights, the brand, right, that you're dealing with on a day-to-day, that you managed to do something like, thank God you got Rick to work with. I mean, because we work with him. And he's a very complex guy, but he is totally understands serving an artist. He absolutely does, right?
Absolutely. And what you said earlier is interesting because it's I try to compartmentalize when I'm at work, when I'm at my job. I have to be in my authentic version of myself, or else when I step away from whatever piece I've made to then become the business owner of the commodity of myself.
Yeah.
If it's not genuine art, if it's not a genuine conversation like what we're having, I feel a lot of shame about then giving that to the rest of the world to look at. So I felt a lot of shame walking around pretending I was perfectly healthy and fine. And really, I was starving myself. Because, like, what does that do to young women across the world looking at me if I have the great pleasure of being a famous person? I just think I have to live in my authentic self first, or else I feel too much guilt and shame to then step out and look at the commodity of what I am then, quote unquote, selling. I mean, because it is, it's a business, it's a job, yep. But my job is being so open-hearted that it sometimes is terrifying.
Yeah. Talk about a tight rope.
Yeah.
High wire act. Absolutely.
A fine line. That's what fine line is about on the record.
Yeah. Everybody, of course, my own experience, I was in the record business and part actually of one of the large majors at the time. And so I got to see a lot of stuff, some of it not too pretty. I mean, the music business is a very difficult place for an artist. Absolutely.
I actually want to ask you, as someone who's dedicated your life in large to helping spread awareness and bringing people to Ram Dass, which is it's like a very selfless job you have, right?
I get into as much, you know, self-motivated BS as everybody else, okay? I'm the director of a foundation and the founder of a podcast network. And I'm a producer of a documentary film, whatever, music, all of it. Do you think the beauty was though that I had, when Ram Dass was alive, I had him to get on the phone and say, Ram Dass, I got to tell you all the bullshit that's in my head, please. And he would listen to me and I'd go on about my self-interest in each of the different aspects of what I was doing. And can you imagine? He ate it up. He did this for everybody. But, I mean, for me, when I was in India, I had some crazy bullshit going on. It was like Ram Dass was a psychologist. I mean, he had all that shit down. And he had the way in which he integrated the spiritual path into Western psychology. So people got a handle, like that's what you're listening to, right? Him being able to go on about stuff in a way that made you feel, okay, there's a path here. I can do something, you know. It requires practice, like everything else, and you know all about that. And then you start to build resilience so that you're not so caught into the thoughts and the stories you tell yourself. And that's basically what happens. So I had that with Ram. Talk about lucky. I was really lucky. But did I have that going on where I could see all of the self-interest that I devoured myself into on a day-to-day basis? But mindfulness practice is very great.
Oh, it's really, it's very important. I noticed when I met it, Oh, that's true. I try to meditate consistently. Mm. I'm going to be honest with you. Some days are better than others. Some weeks are better than others. Some years are better than others. Okay. And the last fucking thing I want to do when I'm going into a darker place, the last thing I want to do is meditation. Why? I don't know, because every time I do it, it makes me feel better. Every single time without fail, it makes me more present. It makes me more grateful. But it's the last thing I want to do. So I'm kind of curious if Ram Dass ever commented on that. Because I'm just curious why the thing that helps you the most, struggle.
You know, we have this we have this wonderful thing at ramdass.org. It's a 5-day course about how to learn how to practice, etc., and get a perspective that allows you to see through yourself. So go to ramdass.org and just put your email address in of whatever, and they'll send you the, I mean, I'm, this sounds stupid because it's a bit of an ad for people to go there, but we put this together. It's the most direct Ram, because people, you know what? We did a survey. People, that was the core of what they, what would you like to get here most that would help your life balance on the day to day? And your, what you just said is, how do I manage to get a regular practice? How do I manage to not avoid it by virtue of having fear of it in a way? I'm going to get bored. I can't keep my mind. I'm just one thought after another. I can't keep to the
object. Sometimes I just am a brat. Like, I get this thing that's very bratty where I'm like,
yeah, screw it. I don't need to be doing
it.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't want to. I deserve to lay in bed and eat some candy.
Yeah.
And so, it's like, well, I don't feel very, like, the difference of how I'm going to feel afterwards is like 180.
Yeah. No, I know. And so you know that. And you just, you, well, I'll tell you, the only way I've done it over these many years is set up a habitual pattern that's not a fucked up one. In other words, I am, okay, I'm going to have a cup of coffee every morning, right?
Okay.
Whatever. We all have some kind of ritual around breakfast. Mm-hmm. Even if it's, I'm not having breakfast, I don't eat breakfast. Whatever it is, there's a pattern there. In this case, it's, I'm going to sit in front of my little pictures and little incense I'm going to light. I don't care if it's 5 minutes. I'm going to sit there every morning when I get up, brush my teeth, I'm going to go sit in the... Do you know who Sharon Salzberg is, by the way?
No, oh, I know the name, but I don't know... Yeah.
Sharon is a dear friend, one of the great teachers that we've got, Buddhist teachers, And so one day, my friend Duncan Trussell, who's a great podcaster, said at a retreat we would get together when we were up on stage. He says, Sharon, what do you do when you get up the first thing in the morning? What is your practice? And she said, I get up, I sit down on my meditation cushion, and I get real. That's kind of, you know, if you can get into that habitual pattern by virtue of that, because one way or the other, if you sit there and go, I'd rather just be in bed asleep, or I'd rather, you know, be eating my, you know, omelet, whatever the hell it is, whatever it is, you're going to create a new habitual pattern. And that's kind of what it's all about.
I've also read that it takes 90 days to create a new habit. So
yeah.
I'm like, so there you listening go. To you talk, I'm thinking like, sometimes being like, you have to meditate every day for the rest of your life. You have to work out 4 times a week every day for the rest of your life. It sounds too overwhelming, but I think I could commit to 90 days.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Everybody out there, it's a meditation challenge from Kesha. There you go.
Oh, my gosh. Hey. Let's do it together.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we can, like, check up on each other. And be like, did you meditate today?
Have that, and Sharon herself has done it. And somebody just said to me the other day from Love Server member, hey, can we have we've done it before, a meditation challenge where just that, everybody's able to check in through, you know, we have a community online. So,
And that's at ramdas.org.
.org, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I'm going to call myself out. I've been meaning to go and take a course for the past 6 months, but it's been a little chaotic in my life. I just put out this record.
Really?
But I'm going to do it because it really is, at the end of the day, it is self-serving in a sense, but then you're just like also making enough space to serve yourself, to get calm enough to be able to then give to others.
Yeah, period. That's it. That's it in a nutshell. Can you tell me, Kesha, about the making of Eat the Acid?
Absolutely. Yes. Remind me, I have a question for you that is going to escape me.
Okay, well, write it down. Or ask me now.
Okay, let me ask you now, and then I want to get into Eat the Acid.
I'll remember.
Because I have terrible memory. Hold on. Oh, I wanted to ask you how working with Ram Dass and having this be such a big part of your life and working in the music business, which is a notoriously, I don't know what word to use, not enlightened, driven by the wrong things, evil, deranged, dangerous, scary place. How did those things work together?
Well, first of all, when I did that, that was for, 20-odd years. It was actually, I was in a studio making a record with Krishan Das. I can't, do we talk about him? The chant guy. And he's somebody we have to turn you on to. Yeah. Anyhow, I got a message that Ram Dass had gone into a hospital. And so he had had his stroke, and I saw him, but I was not working with him. This was late 90s. And all of a sudden, I got a message that he got septic in Maui, and he was in a hospital close to death. And that's a whole side story, how I was told by our Indian mother, actually, for me and several other people to go there and get him situated. And he did get better, and we got him situated in Maui. At that time, I went on to we created a trust to help. He had given everything away. Ram Dass gave away he gave away his royalties to be here now. Do you know how much money? I mean, each year that makes, for what this is, a handsome amount of money. And he gave it away. So it drove us to put something together, and it was ramdass.org that allowed him to teach online. And then we had retreats in Maui and and so on. And then I became very involved, right after that. But before the record, and I had sold the record company, we had sold it by that time. And so it was two distinctly different periods. The record company period, and then Ram Dass, which is now going on, 20 years or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you miss the drama of the before time?
I miss him in the way I don't miss him, and I miss him. And it's that thing, he himself said, you can live on two separate planes of consciousness at the same time. So I'm, the fact that I miss him is still a plane of consciousness, I'm thinking of him all the time. We're doing a podcast, we're talking about him.
Yeah.
My day-to-day work certainly has it's every day. I still go, in my mind, I just go and say, hey, look what I got going here. And, this, whatever, the thing that gets me, and of course, is self-motivation, and what's good for me, where I'm focusing on that ahead of what's good for what I'm doing and what I should be doing. So I miss that. On another plane, he is so manifested through this stuff and through his words and through everything that's happening that I know that he is, the one experience I had, this is going a little bit out of school, I went to his house not long, a year, 2 years maybe after he had left. And I just sat and meditated in his room. And I don't have a lot of visionary stuff going on in meditation, and I don't see anything for the most part. But I did in this moment. And I saw him with our guru, Neem Karoli Baba, and he was just by him. And I thought to myself, or I said it out loud, oh, you decided just to stay on that plane. Cool.
That makes me really happy to hear this story.
Yeah, that was my experience. But other people seem to have had similar experiences where he's, and this is, by the way, everybody out there, I have no idea about any of this. I'm just talking like gibberish in one sense because I really don't know. But I did have that experience. And I feel that his connection to us is very much a powerful thread at this point. And now, you know, some people have that with ancestors, all sorts of different ancestors. It's very much a, you know, a beautiful practice, especially with, you know, the shamanistic societies and so on and so forth.
I actually don't know the answer to this. Did Ram Dass or does Ram Dass believe in reincarnation?
Yeah, absolutely. Reincarnation. Karma and reincarnation, yeah.
Yeah. So do you think you've come across his new earthly manifestation?
No. No idea. Nothing. Interesting. And I don't pay much attention to that, honestly, because that's so out of my realm of pay grade. Way beyond our pay grade. We have no idea. In Tibet, they have an idea. They absolutely... they get signs. The Dalai Lama, you know, will have some kind of sign or a dream or a vision telling a Lama to go to a certain place in Nepal or something, yeah. And they find what's called a tulku. So I have personally experienced people who, in India, you know, very evolved people who remember their past life. So I know it's as real as you and I talking right now.
Oh, I believe in that stuff too. I know it's far beyond my pay grade also, but it's something I like to think about because it makes me feel, I don't know, it makes me feel happy. And you had asked me earlier about eat the acid.
Yes.
And what the story you just told me reminded me of kind of how that song came to manifest itself was I was here locked down, the COVID quarantine was in full swing. Nobody had no idea what the fuck was going on. There was so much anxiety. I just put out an album and I was very absorbed in that, honestly. And I was getting ready to go on tour and that got canceled. And I started just really having a hard time existing because existence at home, being in one place, not having an audience was very different to the 12 years before.
Yeah, especially.
I'm sure it was a collectively traumatic time for a lot of people. But for me, like my mental health was just really all over the place. I couldn't even just walk down the street without sobbing. Like it really felt like I was on the verge of a psychotic breakdown. And then I would meditate to try to, you know, when like all else failed and I finally stopped fighting myself, I'd sit down and meditate. So this one night I remember just, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to go. So I was just like, okay, I'm going to meditate. And I laid in bed and I meditated and I shit you not, my cat was like, I love my cat. The only love song on the album is called All I Need Is You and it's about my cat. Like he's a very evolved boy. But he brings me my headphones in his stupid little mouth and drops them on my chest. And he's never done it ever before and never done it since. And so that was my indication to meditate because I usually do it with the headphones in. Hmm. And I was like, fine. My cat's telling me to meditate. Fine, I'm going to meditate. So I meditate and I start seeing like this. It's almost like everything went pixelated. Like a pointillism painting. And I just saw everything kind of visually melt. And then I saw the universe and how connected we are. And I saw...
No drugs, right? No acid.
Well, that's the fucking cherry on top of all this is that I was sober. And this is a story that I've heard described by my mother... When I was 10 years old, told me not to take acid, that everything I would see would disassemble. I would see things, you would never unsee them. She had a really difficult time with her acid trip and like,
sounds like it
was bad. And so I had this experience that I can only liken it to what my mom's acid trip sounded like, but totally sober, meditating in my room. And I really genuinely thought I was having a psychotic breakdown. Because everything felt like I started looking at the structures of society and where hate was like founded and built upon organized religion, like everything, hours. And then I had a voice start speaking to me. And it was, I had a very good sense of humor, which I'm like, I love that my higher power has this sense of humor that really is helpful for me, because I feel like you gotta laugh or you're gonna be fucked. And I don't know, it was like a very pivotal moment in my life where all of a sudden I believed in something greater than myself and kind of let go of the control and felt held by the universe and felt like we're connected, instead of feeling this like this holding on, a little bit like what you were describing when you were meditating. And I mean, very different, but the same kind of almost psychedelic property to the experience. And I woke up the next day and I called my doctor, I called my therapist, I called everybody on my team. And I told them, like, I went crazy. I had a psychotic break. Like, I was Googling what to do. What are the steps to take after you have a psychotic breakdown? And my therapist was like, congratulations, you've had a spiritual awakening and an ego death, it sounds like.
Oh, shit, you had a good therapist.
Yeah. And I'm getting chills just thinking about it, because I was so confused. It's just so confused, because you do therapy and you work on yourself and you meditate and you do all this stuff. And I had no idea that that was the goal, is to have everything you've ever known and ever believed in and ever knew to be true disintegrate in front of your eyes.
Have you had psychedelics before this or not?
I've never done acid. So then I wanted to call the song. So I woke up the next day and wrote the song Eat the Acid. And I called my mom, because she's an amazing songwriter, but also she's the one that gave me the advice to never take acid. So I never did. So I would never have this exact experience.
Yeah.
And I called an amazing producer friend of mine, Stuart Crichton. And we wrote the song. And that was the catalyst for a Gag Order, the album I did with
really?
Rick. Yeah.
Wow.
And
that
I have,
is amazing.
It was life-changing. And I have done psychedelics before, and you get little hints. I'm kind of a pussy when it comes to getting fucked up. As much as my reputation would precede me that I am good at partying, I'm actually so anxious and such a control freak that that in large part was bravado mixed with stupidity of youth. But I have, and I'm a big fan of mushrooms in the right environment, safe, and I'm not saying anyone else should do it, to be clear. But I have had really beautiful experiences on mushrooms, but I never kind of felt like things were so serious. Like before, when I'd taken mushrooms, it would be like silly and fun. I don't think I'd ever had a proper ceremony or anything.
Yeah. You know, when you describe this, I mean, I think you even said the voice you were hearing had a good sense of humor. So my higher self has a good sense of humor. You said that, right? Just
yeah.
Now. Yeah. I mean, to me, this is nothing more or less than being spoken to by that which has so many different names. I actually know it by guru. I know it by that which represents the universal, I mean, God, what, you know, all these things, the Buddha mind, you know, there's so many different names. It's all BS. Actually, the first thing Neem Karoli Baba, one of the first things he said to us was in Hindi, sub ek, there's only one. There's one thing going on, one. And he'd go, Krishna, Buddha, Christ, Muhammad, one. So, you know, we really deeply got that message. But you know, in this particular culture, the guru, well, I don't even know if it's just this culture, many, especially in South America, the shamanistic cultures, they definitely have teachers who have, I know of people who have a dream, say, I'm supposed to go see so-and-so in, you know, in the tribal lands, and they get together in that actually happened to be a woman, a friend of mine, said, "I've been waiting for you." Wow. So these things are common. They happen all the time. And that being is a representation of that which is. I mean, again, we go back to trying to find names, you know, for this stuff is very difficult. But that which is, I like. I mean,
I like that too.
Yeah. The divine presence even works. Whatever. You were spoken to by, I mean, you didn't tell me this before, this story. So, I mean, I heard a little bit about it, but I never heard it directly. That's what I get out of it. This is grace. You were spoken to directly like that and had the stuff revealed. You know, that's fantastic. And then this record comes out, and look what, you know, and I mean, we could go on here for another hour, Kesha, and I know we can't, but I mean, there is just everybody out there. This is, I'm not being a fanboy either. I mean, you know, I knew of Kesha before through the prayer song. What's that song called?
It's called Praying.
Praying.
You're not. When I first like talked to you, I didn't know if you had ever heard of my music before. So yeah. I had no idea if you were aware of my presence at all in the world.
Yeah, that song. Yes, I was very aware. That song got me. I mean, it connected, absolutely connected. So anyhow, the bottom line is, I just got to say to everybody, go check this out. You know, and there, Kesha put this beautiful that she chose, which is Ram Dass. He says, "You'd rather be vulnerable and be hurt than living dead," and that's what this album is. Okay, period. Never mind. Also, you know, the incredible. I mean, you had a lot of collaborating going on in this record. I mean, I saw all the different people involved. You know. And not just Rick, and there's a lot of very unique things.
Thank you. And I feel like as I was hearing you talk about kind of the shaman that you get called to, right? I'm also reading this book by Alexander Jodorowsky, who made Holy Mountain.
Yep, I know who Jodorowsky is.
And he talks about psychomagic, which is something I'm not totally familiar with yet. But I'm like, it piqued my interest. But the thing I took away from it, and he also speaks of Zen teachings, and we are all talking about the same thing. So getting caught up in the semantics of what your name for it is, or it's so fighting about something that is so irrelevant to the purpose, which is like the source and the one, kind of what you were saying, and the connection we all have. And becoming aware of this source and allowing yourself to succumb to being held and loved by the source. And also for me, a huge part of this album was trying to love myself with the same love that the source felt like it had for me has been incredibly difficult and like cringy at times, but I think it's important.
Lifetime of work. No, I mean, yeah. I know because, you know, I've been I'm on the other end of the lifetime. So I know just how much it takes to just even get to the point where you're not taking yourself too seriously. Ram Dass in this movie, Becoming Nobody, says at one point when he's asked by the director, a contemporary interview, and it took place in Maui. Okay, what advice can you give Ram Dass now in terms of the spiritual path? What are the two things that you would so highly suggest? And he said, the two things are love and humor.
I love that. Oh, my God. So I feel like I didn't know that quote, and I feel like I understood the assignment because those are my two favorite things.
So there's so many songs, you know, that I wish I could, you know, what I like doing is go back to the radio station and play the music for people, you know.
Oh my God, please do.
50,000 watts I had back then. But this one song, though, it begets a little story that we can end with. And it's called Happy.
Mm,
it's the last song in the
baby.
Album.
My baby. Yes, yeah. That's my baby.
Is there not a somebody speaking at the very beginning? Sometimes you think you are doing the magic, but maybe the magic's doing you. Who mm-hmm. is that?
That is a man named Oberon Zell, who is a wizard that lives in Seattle, who I'm friends with.
Wow, I love that. I take the magic to be in the encompassing big magic of what we live every day. Anyhow, in the chorus, you have the chorus, all I want it to be is happy, right? By the way, the Beatle-type chords that are in there are phenomenal. They just...
Thank you.
Yeah, really great. So here's the story that we can go with. So I'm in India with Neem Karoli Baba. My brother, I got him to come over. I said, you got to get over here. My entire family were devotees, had been with Neem Karoli Baba, except my mother, who was with our Indian mother. She came over too. So we're there, and we're with Neem Karoli Baba, my brother, myself, and my wife-to-be, who he ended up marrying us. And so he says to my father, why did you come to India? And my father said, well, I wanted to see how my sons were doing. And Maharaji said, we called him Maharaji, by the way. Mm. And it's a nickname. And he said, well, how are they doing? And my father said, well, they seem to be happy. He said, happiness is everything. And over the years, I've taken this not to mean you even have a little thing I loved it. There's a fine line between happy and stupid as fuck is one of your lines in this record. Okay. And I don't mean that happy. I mean, I know that he didn't mean that happy. I know he meant the kind of happy which is leans to the word contentment. You are okayness. Okayness is a great thing. I just did a podcast with a Tibetan, with a friend of mine who did a book with a Tibetan Lama, Danny Goleman. By the way, Danny Goleman, Emotional Intelligence. Whenever his name comes up, I say, go get that book because we all need emotional intelligence.
Is it called Emotional Intelligence?
It's called Emotional Intelligence. Anyhow, I did a podcast with him and he did this marvelous teacher, Tibetan Lama. And he said, beneath everything is this essence love. And that equates to okayness. It's all okay. And that's what happy is doing for me. So,
My God.
We have to end this here, and I
that's
can't thank you enough.
Place.
Yeah. Thanks, everything.
Thank you.
You've done with this thank music, you. Which means more to me than anything else. So,
thank you. Oh, I'm very, very, very grateful and proud to have Ram Dass and your blessing. And I really feel like this is the most special thing I've ever made. Who knows what's going to happen in the future? It might be the most special thing I've ever made in my life. So thank you for being a part of
that. It's the most special thing here and now. And we're going to
enjoy. Let me show you. This is my...
Oh,
This is my Bible.
That's so great.
This
Wonderful.
Was sent to me when I was in rehab. So, like, I take it everywhere. Oh, this helped me.
Really?
So
wonderful.
Everybody
Kesha.
Get this.
Everybody get gag order. Go get it. You can't get it anymore. You got to go to Spotify or wherever you get this
stuff. Go to Spotify,
stuff.
Listen to it, and get Be Here Now, and go to ramdass.org.
See you later.
Thank you so much for this.
Yeah, thank you, Kesha.